When you think of the automotive industry, perhaps your mind immediately goes to sleek new car models, the roar of a powerful engine, or maybe the quiet glide of an innovative electric vehicle. But have you ever stopped to consider the colossal, often overlooked companies that don't just sell those vehicles? I mean, the ones that also help you finance them, keep them running smoothly for years, and, well, literally get them from the factory into your driveway.
Right. It's a massive, intricate ecosystem and often hidden in plain sight.
Exactly. And today we're taking a deep dive into one of its true, often unseen giants, AutoNation.
Okay, let's unpack this. We're peeling back the layers on AutoNation, Inc. That's the largest automotive retailer in the United States, trading on the NYSE as AN.
Yeah, and it's crucial to understand this isn't just, you know, a big chain of car dealerships. It's much more integrated than that, a real powerhouse.
Understanding them really means getting a handle on a huge chunk of how cars move through the economy, you know, from the initial sale all the way through their entire life cycle on the road. What's truly fascinating about AutoNation, I think, is how they've built this business that, on the surface, looks incredibly cyclical. You'd think it would be directly tied to every economic up and down, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you look closer, they've woven in some really strong counter-cyclical elements, things designed specifically to provide stability.
Oh, so?
Well, they've diversified their revenue streams.
Yeah.
Across new and used vehicle sales, yes. But also a surprisingly resilient and high-margin after-sales parts and service division, and even a rapidly expanding in-house financing arm. AutoNation Finance, they call it.
Ah, okay. So that gives them a unique kind of resilience.
Exactly. Plus, they're positioned as the leading consolidator in what is still a highly fragmented industry. They leverage their immense scale for efficiency and, importantly, consistently return value to shareholders, primarily through pretty aggressive share repurchases.
And that's exactly what our mission is for you today. We've taken a stack of sources, articles, research, our own notes, and really tried to extract the most important nuggets of knowledge and insight about AutoNation. So you don't have to wade through it all yourself. Our goal is to help you understand what's most important in this material, so you walk away feeling like an expert, or at least ready to connect the dots yourself. We'll arm you with some surprising facts, maybe, and hopefully just enough humor to keep you hooked. I, AutoNation at a Glance, the giant of automotive retail. Right, let's start with the big picture then. AutoNation, Inc. It isn't just a car dealer. It is the largest automotive retailer in the U.S., period.
That scale is just immense.
And we say they're diversified, we mean it, in like every sense.
Mm.
Their core operations truly span the entire vehicle ownership lifecycle. They sell brand new cars. They sell used cars. Mm-hmm. They have this incredibly resilient and high margin after sales division for parts and service.
Which we'll definitely dig into more.
Oh, yeah. And increasingly, they're getting into in-house financing with AutoNation Finance.
Right. So this is a company that is absolutely leveraging its scale, driving efficiencies, and creating a powerful competitive advantage in a way smaller players just, well, they just can't compete on that level.
That position as a leading consolidator, it isn't just, you know, a buzzword on an investor presentation, is it?
Not at all. It translates into real, tangible operational efficiencies. Think about it. Marketing, IT infrastructure, human resources, even inventory management across hundreds of locations. When you're operating at AutoNation scale, you can centralize these functions and you achieve cost savings that smaller independent dealers simply can't touch.
Right.
And as you mentioned, a significant part of their financial identity, their shareholder return strategy, it revolves around a disciplined and frankly aggressive share repurchase program that has a direct impact on their earnings per share. It's a core part of their story.
So when we look at their investment profile, it truly is multifaceted. On
yeah.
one hand, yeah, the core vehicle sales business is undeniably exposed to that inherent cyclicality of consumer demand.
Mm-hmm. Very sensitive.
If the economy slows down,
yep.
if interest rates jump, that impacts their ability to sell new and used cars, no question.
It's a highly sensitive part of their business.
But then, as you alluded to, they have this powerful counterbalancing force, right?
Absolutely. This balance between the cyclical sales and the stable service segments is really key to understanding the resilience of their business model. It's fundamental. Think of it like a finely tuned shock absorber for, you know, economic bumps.
That's a good analogy.
Their high margin service segment benefits directly from a powerful underlying secular trend. The average age of vehicles on U.S. roads, it's climbed to over 12.5 years now.
Wow, 12 and a half years.
Yeah. And here's a surprising fact, maybe. older cars don't just need more service.
Right.
They often need more expensive service more often.
Oh, okay.
So this creates a highly stable, predictable revenue stream that helps cushion them when new car sales might slow down.
And they're not just sitting still on that, are they?
No, no. They're actively investing in strategic growth initiatives. Things like digital retail, their captive financing arm. They're adapting to evolving consumer behaviors and trying to capture more of that value chain for themselves.
Okay, so this all boils down to a central investment thesis for AutoNation then. Something like their formidable scale, those diversified and counter-cyclical revenue streams we just talked about, and their disciplined capital allocation strategy.
Mm-hmm.
All position them remarkably favorably to navigate the significant cyclical and structural transformations happening in the automotive retail industry.
That sums it up pretty well.
So today we're going to dive into specific themes like the sustainability of those post-pandemic vehicle margins as inventory levels finally normalize. That's a big one.
Huge.
How effective their strategic pivots towards EVs and omni-channel digital experiences really are.
Execution risk there.
And their ongoing capacity to continue consolidating this fragmented market to create durable shareholder value.
Exactly. These are the key questions. And to truly set the stage for a nuanced understanding, it's vital we consider both the bull and the bear cases for AutoNation.
Good point. Let's lay those out.
Okay. The optimists, what we call the bulls, they see significant strength. Their undeniable scale advantage in an industry just ripe for consolidation. Those defensive characteristics of that high margin after sales business we've highlighted.
The shock absorber.
Shock absorber, yeah. A value accretive share repurchase program that consistently boosts earnings per share. And that strategic expansion into in-house financing, which adds another layer of profitability and control.
Okay, that's the sunny side. What about the bears, the skeptics?
Right. The bears, they point to some very real headwinds that could derail that optimistic view. Their primary concerns include AutoNation's inherent cyclical exposure to economic downturns and rising interest rates, that sensitivity we mentioned, the potential for significant margin compression as market dynamics normalize after the truly unique post-pandemic period. We're talking about those record profits possibly fading.
Right, back to reality, maybe.
Maybe. Intense competition from both traditional and digital native retailers. And of course, the inherent execution risks associated with the industry's massive transition toward electrification and digital-first retail models. That's a huge undertaking.
So for you, our listener, trying to get a handle on this company, what this means is we've got to look at both sides of the coin. Appreciate the strengths, absolutely, but also acknowledge the very real headwinds.
It's a dynamic and complex picture. But that complexity is where the true understanding lies, I think. Two, dissecting the business model, where the revenue flows.
Okay, now that we have the overview, let's really dissect AutoNation's business model. Let's understand, you know, granularly where their revenue and profits actually flow from.
That's good.
Their operational framework is built on this comprehensive automotive retail model, providing a full suite of products and services throughout the entire vehicle ownership lifecycle. From the moment you even think about buying it to when you finally trade it in years later.
Right. And it's crucial to note their strategic geographic concentration. This focus on the Sun Belt isn't accidental.
No.
No. It's a calculated play on population growth and economic vitality. Approximately 65%, think about that, almost two-thirds of their total retail new vehicle sales are generated by dealerships located specifically in high-growth states like Florida, California, and Texas.
Wow, okay. That's a big concentration.
It is. And while this provides significant exposure to favorable demographic and economic trends, it also concentrates their risk profile.
Meaning
a major regional economic downturn or, you know, a significant natural disaster in one of those areas could disproportionately impact their overall performance. It's a double-edged sword.
Got it. And their financial results are driven by four principal business lines, you said.
That's right. And this diversification isn't just for show. It's a cornerstone of their business model. Each line has distinct margin profiles, different growth drivers, and different sensitivities to the economic cycle. It's a portfolio approach.
Okay, let's break them down. First up, new vehicles.
The biggest top-line contributor.
Right, largest revenue contributor. In the second quarter of 2025, it brought in over $3.4 billion. That was a solid 9% increase year over year.
Mm-hmm. Healthy growth.
And this growth was really propelled by a 7% to 8% increase in same-store retail unit sales, which signals a healthy recovery in both consumer demand and, importantly, the supply of vehicles for manufacturers.
But, And there's always a but.
Huh, yeah. Historically, this segment operates on the lowest gross margins within their entire portfolio.
Correct.
And its profitability is highly sensitive to fluctuations in manufacturer production, inventory levels, and the incentives they offer to consumers.
It's the volume driver, but not necessarily the margin leader. That's a good way to put it.
Okay, next up. Used vehicles.
Also a very significant portion of their sales. This segment generated over $2 billion in revenue in Q2 2025. That was a 4% year-over-year increase, supported by a 6% rise in same-store unit sales.
And what's interesting here you mentioned is the stability of their profit per car, right? The GPU.
Yeah, the gross profit per unit, or GPU. It's been remarkably stable, hovering robustly between $1,627 and $1,650 in recent periods. The used vehicle market serves as a valuable hedge against new vehicle supply constraints, too. It provides a more affordable entry point for consumers.
Which becomes especially important during times of economic uncertainty, I imagine.
Precisely.
Okay, so we've got new cars, used cars. Now, as we dig into these revenue streams, one segment truly stands out for its unique resilience, almost flying under the radar compared to the flashiness of new car sales. What is it, and how does this part of their model truly differentiate them?
That's absolutely the after-sales parts and service segment. And it's not just profitable, it's practically recession-proof in many ways. It's a foundational pillar of their business.
Really? Recession-proof?
Maybe not completely proof, but highly resilient. In Q2 2025, it posted revenue of $1.2 billion, a robust 12% year-over-year increase. And gross profit grew right alongside that by 12% to 13%. Here's the counterintuitive truth, maybe, about AutoNation's resilience. While flashy new cars grab headlines, it's the greasy, high-margin world of parts and service that's their real financial shock absorber.
Ah, back to the shock absorber.
Exactly. The non-discretionary nature of many repair and maintenance services provides a resilient, recurring revenue stream. It's much less correlated with the broader economic cycle than just selling cars. This is where the long-term cash flow truly resides, ensuring a steady stream of income even when new car sales might hit a bumpy road.
That makes a lot of sense, especially with cars getting older on average.
Bingo! That 12.5-year average age directly feeds this segment.
Okay, so they get new cars, used cars, and the incredibly stable after sales. That's already quite a diversified mix. And finally, the customer financial services, or F&I, segment. This is another high-margin area for them, isn't it?
Indeed, it truly is. This segment generated $363 million in revenue in Q2 2025, a strong 13% year-over-year increase.
And where does that revenue actually come from?
It comes from arranging financing for customers, you know, the car loan itself, and selling a portfolio of vehicle protection products.
Like extended warranties.
Exactly. Extended service contracts, DRAP insurance, things like that. Profitability in this segment is closely tied to overall vehicle sales volume and AutoNation's ability to increase its finance and insurance penetration rate per vehicle sold, how much extra they can add to each deal.
So it's about maximizing the value of each transaction beyond just the vehicle itself.
That's the goal.
AutoNation also gives us a deeper look by reporting performance across three distinct vehicle brand segments, which reveal some important underlying trends. The domestic segment that includes brands like Ford, GM, Stellantis, showed remarkable strength in Q2 2025.
Yeah, that was pretty striking.
Segment income surged by an impressive 83% year-over-year, driven by a 10% increase in revenue.
But the really telling metric.
Was that 19% year-over-year and 14% sequential growth in same-store new unit sales?
Right, exactly. That powerful performance suggests that the supply chain disruptions that had previously hampered domestic automakers have largely abated. They're finally able to meet significant pent-up demand.
But there's a risk here, isn't there, with supply normalizing?
Always. The risk is that this normalization carries the potential for a more competitive pricing environment, which could pressure those historically high new vehicle margins they've enjoyed since the pandemic. Things might get tougher.
Okay. Meanwhile, the import segment, think Toyota, Honda, Hyundai. How do they do?
Continued steady performance. Segment income grew a solid 23% year-over-year to $133 million in Q2 2025. Reliable.
And the premium luxury segment. Mercedes-Benz, BMW, Lexus.
Still the biggest contributor overall. Largest contributor to both revenue over $2.6 billion in Q2 2025 and segment income at $180 million.
And growth.
Impressive income growth of 27% year-over-year. Which really underscores the remarkable resilience of that luxury consumer segment. They tend to be less sensitive to economic fluctuations. People with higher incomes still want their luxury cars, even when the economy gets a little shaky.
Seems so. And we can't forget their strategic push into AutoNation Finance, that in-house financing arm.
Right. It's starting to yield positive results. Generated $2 million in income in Q2 2025. That's a notable turnaround from a loss in the prior year period.
And they hit a milestone there recently.
They did, a critical milestone. The successful completion of a $700 million asset-backed securitization.
Which means?
Which provides a stable and scalable funding mechanism for future loan portfolio growth. It reduces their reliance on more expensive, short-term, third-party capital markets, gives them more control and better economics.
Gotcha. Now, underpinning all of this, you mentioned the franchise relationships AutoNation holds with the car manufacturers, the OEMs.
Absolutely foundational. These agreements grant them exclusive rights to sell and service specific vehicle brands within designated geographic territories.
And this system creates formidable barriers to entry for new competitors, right? Because the OEMs control who gets a dealership and where.
Precisely. It's a deeply entrenched system, very hard to break into for new vehicle sales. AutoNation's long-term strategy involves actively managing its portfolio of these franchises, divesting non-core or underperforming stores, and strategically acquiring dealerships that align with its goal of diversifying towards higher demand volume import and premium luxury brands.
Making sure they have the right mix of dealerships in the right locations.
Exactly. It's portfolio management, essentially.
This brings us back to what I see as the unsung hero of their business model. The after-sales segment as a defensive moat.
I agree completely. It's not just about fixing cars. It's a crucial defensive moat for the entire business and a primary engine for funding shareholder returns.
The data backs that up.
Yeah. The data from Q2 2025 shows after-sales gross profit expanding by 12%. That significantly outpaced the 8% total revenue growth, showcasing its superior margin stability.
So as we connect this to the bigger picture.
The after-sales division isn't just about fixing cars. It's a central pillar of AutoNation's financial strategy. It provides that stable base to weather the inevitable ups and downs of vehicle sales. And this operational strength is supported by that powerful secular trend we keep mentioning. The average age of vehicles on U.S. roads climbing past 12.5 years.
Right. Older cars need more work.
More frequent, often more complex maintenance and repairs. This creates a growing, non-discretionary, recurring revenue stream for AutoNation's service base. This highly reliable, high-margin cash flow provides the stable financial foundation. It enables the company to consistently fund its aggressive share repurchase program. Was it $254 million in the first half of 2025?
I think that was the number.
Yeah. And pursue strategic acquisitions. Even when vehicle sales margins are under pressure, it's the dependable engine driving their long-term value. 3, industry earthquakes, consolidation, competition, and transformation.
Okay, let's pull back now and look at the broader industry AutoNation operates within.
Yeah.
The automotive retail market is, well, it's vast, an integral part of the global economy.
Huge numbers. Nearly $4 trillion in 2024 and projected to expand at a compound annual growth rate of over 7% through 2032.
And North America remains the dominant regional market.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the industry is definitely in a state of flux, moving beyond the unprecedented disruptions of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, things are shifting. Key market dynamics we're seeing in 2024 and 2025 include that normalization of new vehicle inventory levels after prolonged shortages.
Right. Cars are actually on the lots again.
Mostly, yeah. And, of course, the impact of a fluctuating interest rate environment on vehicle affordability and consumer demand. That's a big one.
It's a shifting landscape, for sure. And not always an easy one to navigate.
And this shifting landscape brings us to perhaps the most significant structural change happening in U.S. automotive retail right now. Consolidation. It's happening at breakneck speed, as industry experts describe it.
Breakneck speed?
Yeah. While the market is still remarkably fragmented, the pace of acquisitions is accelerating dramatically. In the last 3.5 years alone, more than 2,000 dealerships have been acquired. That's nearly double the historical average transaction rate.
Wow. 2,000 stores changing hands. Imagine being a small, family-owned dealership, a legacy business, seeing these massive players like AutoNation coming in.
Must be daunting.
It really highlights this shift towards scale or get acquired in this industry.
Absolutely. And this trend is propelled by two primary forces, really. First, many multi-generational family-owned dealership groups are facing succession planning challenges. You know, kids don't want to take over the business.
Right.
So selling to a larger entity becomes a very attractive exit strategy, maybe their best option.
And the second force.
Second, there's a growing recognition that scale is absolutely critical for future success. larger groups can achieve significant operational efficiencies in areas like marketing, IT, HR, inventory management, things that are incredibly difficult for smaller operators to replicate cost effectively.
So this consolidation creates, what did you call it, a barbell market structure?
Yeah, some describe it that way. Large tech-advanced players like AutoNation on one end and thousands of smaller, often less technologically advanced dealers on the other, which ironically provides a continuous pipeline of acquisition targets for the big players.
AutoNation is a pivotal player in this wave.
Absolutely. As one of the largest publicly traded dealership groups, their growth strategy is heavily reliant on acquiring smaller dealers to build these super regional clusters that can dominate local markets.
And the scale of this activity is substantial.
Very. Public groups collectively spent $2.7 billion on U.S. acquisitions in 2023 alone.
$2.7 billion.
Yeah. And while the top 10 groups now control an all-time high of 9.3% of all U.S. dealerships, a figure that's steadily rising the market remains overwhelmingly fragmented. And get this, 92% of dealers still own between 1 and 5 stores.
92%.
Yeah. So these smaller operations represent prime acquisition targets for groups like AutoNation, which are strategically focused on building regional density to unlock even more operational synergies.
Okay. Now, with all that consolidation going on, let's talk about the competitive arena. It must be intense.
Oh, it is. Competition within automotive retail is fierce and comes from multiple sources. First, you have the traditional dealers. AutoNation's most direct competitors are other large publicly traded dealership groups. You know the names. Lithium Motors, Penske Automotive Group, Asbury Automotive Group, Group One Automotive.
The other giants.
Right. Beyond these public peers, they also compete with thousands of smaller private dealership groups across the country. The principal competitive factors here are pretty fundamental. Dealership location, the quality of service they provide, vehicle pricing, and the sheer breadth of selection offered. Basic blocking and tackling of retail.
Then you have the online platforms, right? Like Carvana, Vroom.
Yep. The rise of these digital native retailers introduced a disruptive online-first sales model that initially challenged the traditional dealership experience. However, I'd argue this initial threat has been largely mitigated. Incumbent dealers like AutoNation have invested heavily in developing their own sophisticated omnichannel capabilities. They fought back digitally.
And the third threat? The OEM direct sales.
Yeah, the OEM direct sales model, famously pioneered by Tesla. This is a persistent, long-term structural risk to the traditional dealership model, though for now it's largely held in check by a complex web of state-level franchise laws that protect dealers' exclusive rights to sell new vehicles in their designated territories.
But it's a constant legislative battleground, you said.
Absolutely. Always simmering.
So with all that competition swirling around, what exactly is AutoNation's competitive moat? How do they protect their turf and continue to thrive?
Well, first off, that franchise dealership system itself is the most significant barrier to entry for new vehicle retail. Franchise agreements with OEMs are limited, geographically protected, and extremely difficult for new entrants to obtain. That's layer one.
Okay.
Within that protected ecosystem, AutoNation has cultivated a powerful competitive moat built primarily on its industry-leading scale. This scale confers several key advantages. They have massive economies of scale. Allows them to negotiate more favorable terms with suppliers, centralize costly back-office functions like accounting and IT, and deploy larger, more efficient marketing campaigns.
Lower costs, basically.
Lower unit costs, yeah. Beyond that, their scale gives them immense power in data and analytics. AutoNation's operations generate a massive trove of data from millions of customer sales and service transactions. Millions.
And they use this data how?
They leverage it to optimize vehicle pricing, manage inventory across their vast network, and execute highly targeted marketing initiatives. It's a capability smaller competitors simply cannot match. They don't have the data volume.
And brand recognition.
Yes. In an industry largely composed of local and regional players, AutoNation has established a national brand recognition, which fosters greater consumer trust and awareness across multiple markets. People have heard of them. This integrated clicks and bricks model is a particularly durable advantage, I think.
Clicks and bricks, meaning online and physical.
Exactly. Pure online players struggle immensely with establishing a service infrastructure for ongoing maintenance. Where do you get your Carvana car fixed easily?
Good point.
And smaller dealers simply lack the capital for sophisticated digital tools.
Mm.
AutoNation is positioned perfectly for how consumers actually want to buy cars today. Industry data shows 43% of consumers use an omnichannel approach, some online, some in person.
And most still want to test drive, right?
A full 80% still want at least one test drive, and 35% rank in-person product expertise as a top priority.
So the purely online model hasn't completely taken over.
Not at all. This hybrid purchasing journey challenges that thesis and plays directly to AutoNation's strength, an extensive physical network plus its AutoNation Express digital platform. Best of both worlds, arguably. 4. Navigating the headwinds, challenges, and shifts, 2023-2025.
Okay, the automotive industry, like any major sector, faces its share of headwinds and shifts, and AutoNation is certainly navigating them. One of the most significant recent changes has been inventory normalization.
Huge shift.
After years of severe supply chain disruptions and semiconductor shortages that crippled automotive production during the pandemic, new vehicle inventory levels finally fully recovered in 2024. Returning to a state of equilibrium near pre-pandemic norms.
And this fundamentally altered market dynamics, the pricing power that dealers enjoyed during that period of scarcity, it's largely shifted back toward consumers.
So more bargaining power for buyers.
Generally, yes. This has resulted in a notable increase in manufacturer incentives and a steady moderation of those record-high new vehicle gross margins that characterized the 2021-2023 period. It's a return to a more traditional and consequently a more competitive market. Margins are coming down from the stratosphere.
Another major factor impacting the industry is the interest rate environment.
Affordability is key.
The sharp rise in interest rates throughout 2023 and into 2024 significantly increased the cost of auto financing, creating a substantial headwind for the industry by pressuring consumer affordability and dampening sales volumes.
Right. Higher monthly payments make people pause.
While there was some initial relief, maybe, from the Federal Reserve's move to lower rates in late 2024, AutoNation is directly exposed to this.
So?
Well, it impacts the profitability of their F&I segment, the financing and insurance part. It impacts the overall demand for their vehicles, and it impacts their own floor plan interest expenses.
The cost of financing the cars sitting on their lots.
Exactly. That gets more expensive for them, too.
And then we have the grand transformation, the EV transition.
The big one.
This is one of the most significant structural shifts facing the automotive retail industry. It presents both immense opportunity and, frankly, daunting challenges. The adoption rate is accelerating. EV sales are projected to comprise maybe 20-25% of all U.S. new car sales in 2025. That's up substantially from approximately 12% in 2024.
And AutoNation's results reflect this trend.
They do. Their own battery electric vehicle, or BEV, sales grew nearly 20% year over year in Q2 2025. So they are selling them.
But this transition is not without significant challenges for the traditional dealership model, you said.
Definitely not. For one, EVs have far fewer moving parts. Inherently, they require less routine maintenance.
Like oil changes.
Gone. Fewer tune-ups. This poses a long-term threat to that incredibly important high-margin after-sales revenue stream we just talked about. It's a fundamental challenge to that part of the business model.
Plus, dealers have to make substantial capital investments.
Huge investments in charging infrastructure at the dealerships, specialized technician training. It's expensive to get ready for EVs.
And managing inventory must be more complex now.
Yeah, managing a complex inventory mix of both internal combustion engine ICE vehicles and electric vehicles also presents new operational hurdles. What do you stock? How much? It's tricky.
What's particularly interesting, and perhaps a bit surprising, is the nuance in consumer sentiment and the rise of hybrids.
Yeah, this is fascinating. Recent consumer studies have revealed a degree of muted inertia, maybe, regarding the rapid, widespread adoption of pure BEVs. But there's been a notable uptick in interest for hybrid vehicles.
Why is that?
Well, many consumers seem to view hybrids as a best-of-both-worlds solution. You get improved fuel efficiency, lower emissions, but without the range, anxiety, and charging infrastructure concerns associated with pure EVs. It feels like a safer step for many.
And this trend is visible in AutoNation's performance.
Clearly. Their hybrid sales surged by 40% in Q2 2025. That's double the growth rate of their pure BEV sales.
40%, that's significant.
It is. And this consumer pivot towards hybrids is a crucial bridging opportunity, I think. It allows companies like AutoNation to de-risk the massive EV transition because hybrids still have internal combustion engines.
Meaning they still need service?
Meaning they still need the high margin maintenance that traditional cars do, generally speaking, but they still offer the consumer more fuel efficiency. It keeps the service bays humming while the EV transition plays out.
So the hybrids are almost like a lifeline, allowing them to keep that crucial service revenue flowing while they adapt to the fully electric future. That's a fascinating insight into how they're managing this massive shift, isn't it?
It really is. It buys them time and preserves profits during a tricky transition.
Beyond these specific industry shifts, there are also broader external risks.
Always. The automotive industry remains vulnerable to global supply chain disruptions and geopolitical tensions. We saw that clearly recently. For example, the ongoing threat of new tariffs on imported vehicles and parts could significantly increase vehicle prices,
which would likely dampen consumer demand.
Right, and could invalidate industry sales forecasts for 2025. It's a real wild card.
Then there's the regulatory landscape.
Complex and ever-changing. The automotive retail sector operates within a highly regulated environment. State-level franchise laws are a critical component. They provide significant protection to dealers by restricting OEMs from selling vehicles directly to consumers.
But those could change.
They could. It's a constant lobbying battle. Concurrently, increasingly stringent federal and state environmental standards are a primary catalyst accelerating the industry's transition toward electric vehicles, often requiring costly adaptations from dealers. Regulation cuts both ways here, via the financial pulse, performance and underlying drivers.
Okay, let's turn to AutoNation's financial pulse now. Looking at their performance and the underlying drivers, their overall top-line performance has shown impressive resilience, actually.
Yeah, considering the headwinds, it's been pretty solid.
In the second quarter of 2025, total revenue grew a solid 8% year-over-year to $7.0 billion. And for the first half of the year, revenue increased 5% to $13.7 billion.
And that growth was pretty broad-based, right?
It was. Strong contributions from after-sales, up 12%. Customer financial services up 13%. New vehicles increased 9%. Used vehicles posted more modest growth of 4%.
This contrasts a bit with their full year 2024 results, though. Revenue actually experienced a slight decline then, 1.3% from the prior year, reflecting tougher market conditions during that period.
Right. But a key positive development recently has been the trend in gross profit.
Mm-hmm.
Margins improved. In Q2 2025, total gross profit expanded by 10%. That outpaced revenue growth, leading to a 40 basis point improvement in the overall gross margin, reaching 18.3%.
And that margin expansion was a direct result of the company's diversified business model, really. The strong performance and higher margins in the after-sales and used vehicle segments successfully offset the anticipated and ongoing moderation in new vehicle profitability. It shows the portfolio working.
This dynamic was a reversal from the full year 2024 trend.
It was. In 2024, total gross profit fell by 6.7% due to significant pressure on vehicle margins. So Q2 2025 showed a nice rebound in overall margin percentage.
Now, when we look at profitability and returns, AutoNation's reported earnings on a GAAP basis, that's generally accepted accounting principles, have been affected by some significant non-cash charges.
Yeah, this is important to unpack.
In Q2 2025, GAAP diluted EPS actually fell 29% to $2.26. But this fell through was heavily impacted by goodwill and franchise rights impairment charges totaling $3.21 per share.
Huge impairment charge, more than the entire EPS number itself.
So for a learner like you, why is this significant divergence between GAAP and adjusted EPS so critical for understanding the company's real performance?
That's a really critical analytical point. It highlights the necessity of separating these one-time non-cash accounting charges from the underlying health of the business. Such charges, while reflecting a downward revision of the long-term value of specific assets on paper, they don't impact the company's immediate cash-generating ability or day-to-day operations. It's an accounting entry, mostly.
Okay, so what's a clearer picture?
A much clearer picture of the company's core operational profitability is provided by its adjusted diluted EPS, which excludes these one-time items. And that figure surged an impressive 37% year-over-year to $5.46 in Q2 2025.
37% growth adjusted. That's a very different story from down 29% GAAP.
Completely different story. For the full fiscal year 2024, just for context, diluted EPS was $16.92, which was a decrease from $22.74 in 2023, reflecting those broader margin pressures experienced during that year. Historically, the company has generated strong returns on capital, with returns on equity closer to 29% in the past. But that robust 37% growth in adjusted EPS in Q2 2025, driven by strong volumes and profitability in after-sales and F&I, tells a much more powerful story about their core operations right now. It indicates the fundamental business remains very healthy despite those accounting write-downs.
Got it. Adjustments matter here. And looking at cash flow and working capital, AutoNation's cash flow profile in the first half of 2025 reflects their strategic decision to invest heavily in their growing finance arm. The company reported cash used in operating activities of $230 million for the period, which might sound bad initially.
Right. Used cash sounds negative, but you have to look at why.
Exactly. It wasn't due to operational weakness, which is important to clarify. Instead, it was primarily driven by a substantial $695 million increase in auto loans receivable on the balance sheet.
As the AutoNation Finance segment ramped up its loan originations, they were putting money to work building that loan book.
So when you adjust for this strategic investment, the company's underlying cash generation remains robust.
Very robust. Adjusted free cash flow for the first half of 2025 was a healthy $394 million. Plenty of cash being generated by the core business. Blueprints for growth. AutoNation's strategic playbook. So AutoNation's growth strategy. It's a multi-pronged approach, really. Focused on leveraging its scale, expanding its service offerings, and embracing digital innovation to enhance the customer experience and capture greater market share.
And acquisitions are still key.
The acquisition strategy remains a cornerstone of this plan.
Absolutely.
The company actively pursues acquisitions of individual dealerships and small to medium-sized dealership groups to expand its geographic footprint, enter new markets, and build that regional scale we talked about.
Like the Colorado deal recently.
Exactly. The acquisition of two stores in Colorado in April 2025 is a perfect example. And their ability to efficiently integrate these acquisitions and realize operational synergies, that's a core competency. It directly drives value creation for the company. They're good at buying and integrating.
And then there's their truly impressive digital transformation, the AutoNation Express platform.
Yeah, this is the centerpiece of their digital strategy.
And this isn't just about putting cars online, right? This is about using data to predict what you, the customer, need before you even know it. Almost like a digital crystal ball.
Huh? Maybe not quite crystal ball, but definitely data-driven. It's an integrated digital retailing solution designed to provide customers with a seamless and intuitive omni-channel experience. You, the customer, have control. You can browse a vast inventory, calculate payments, apply for financing, get an instant trade-in offer, even schedule in-store pickup or at-home delivery, all online if you want.
And this digital-first approach isn't just about convenience. It's a key driver of efficiency, too.
Definitely. AutoNation has reported that their digital initiatives have helped reduce overhead costs. And the use of AI-powered tools has improved operational efficiency by as much as 68% in some areas and boosted showroom appointment rates.
Wow. 68%.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact is significant overall.
It is. They say 45% of all vehicle sales now are initiated through its online channels. That's nearly half.
That's huge.
And their digital strategy extends far beyond simple e-commerce. It is fundamentally about leveraging data as a powerful competitive asset to create a personalized, high-margin, and importantly, loyal customer ecosystem.
When did you do that?
The company's emphasis on proprietary tools like Customer 360 and the Equity Mining tool is central to this effort. These platforms harness a massive data set covering over 9 million customers. 9 million!
Right.
Allowing AutoNation to analyze individual service histories, purchase propensities, household vehicle ownership, all sorts of things.
And this deep understanding enables
highly effective and proactive marketing. For instance, the system can automatically identify an existing service customer whose vehicle is an ideal candidate for a trade-in.
Based on age, mileage, market value.
Exactly. And generate a personalized offer for a newer model, maybe even with a similar or lower monthly payment.
That's smart.
It fosters a sticky customer relationship, increases retention rates for both sales and service, drives traffic to high margin service bays, and generates a pipeline of efficient, targeted sales leads. Ultimately, this creates a higher lifetime customer value and represents a significant, hard-to-replicate competitive advantage derived directly from the company's unmatched scale and data.
Okay, that's impressive. Then there's the continued after-sales expansion.
Right. Recognizing the stability and high profitability of its parts and service business, management has made its expansion a strategic priority. The stated goal is to capture all of a customer's vehicle service needs throughout their ownership lifecycle. Keep them coming back to AutoNation service centers.
Wow.
This involves actively expanding the technician workforce to increase service capacity and leveraging their vast customer data set for predictive maintenance services. Telling you when you might need service before something breaks. Management has guided for continued mid-single-digit growth in this crucial segment. Steady growth expected.
Another key initiative is the strategic expansion of the in-house finance arm, AutoNation Finance.
Yep. This is aimed at vertical integration. allowing them to capture a larger share of the profit from each vehicle transaction.
How does that work?
By providing direct financing to customers, AutoNation can increase its finance penetration rates and, crucially, retain the interest margin that would otherwise be captured by third-party lenders like banks or credit unions.
Keeping more of the value chain in-house.
Exactly. More profit per car.
And finally, they are actively positioning for EVs. We touched on this, but it's part of the growth plan.
Definitely. AutoNation is actively positioning itself to capitalize on the industry's secular shift toward electrification. The company is strategically building out its inventory of new and used EVs, investing in the necessary charging infrastructure at its dealerships, and implementing comprehensive training programs for its sales and service technicians. They know what's coming.
And the strong sales growth in both hybrid and battery electric vehicles, up 40% and 20% respectively in Q2 2025, demonstrates that these early investments are gaining traction, right?
Yeah, it validates their multifaceted approach. They're selling both and leaning into that hybrid bridge we talked about. Seventh, shareholder value, capital allocation and returns. Okay, let's talk capital allocation. AutoNation's strategy here is disciplined and very clearly prioritized. The primary focus is on returning capital to shareholders through an aggressive share repurchase program. That's number one, supplemented by investments in strategic growth initiatives and those acquisitions we discussed.
So the cornerstone of their shareholder return policy is this aggressive share repurchase program.
Absolutely. The company has a long and consistent track record of being an aggressive buyer of its own stock. They view it as a highly efficient method of creating shareholder value, and their consistent prioritization of buybacks over a regular dividend. It's a clear message to investors.
What a message.
That management sees significant upside potential in their own stock. They think it's undervalued, and the best use of capital is buying it back. It's a powerful internal signal about their long-term prospects.
And when we look at the numbers.
Yeah. In the first half of 2025, AutoNation deployed $254 million to repurchase 1.5 million shares at an average price of approximately $164 per share.
And they still have authorization for more.
As of the end of Q2 2025, yes. The company still had more than $607 million remaining under its existing share repurchase authorization, signaling a continued commitment to this strategy.
And these buybacks have had a material impact on financial results.
Huge impact, significantly reducing the number of shares outstanding. In Q2 2025, the weighted average diluted share count was down 6% year over year, which provides a powerful mechanical boost to earnings per share growth. Fewer shares mean each share represents a bigger piece of the profit pie.
So this financial engineering, driven by consistent free cash flow and maybe a low valuation, is a reliable driver of shareholder value.
It absolutely can be. It shows a disciplined approach to capital that directly benefits you as a potential investor as long as the conditions hold. Think of it this way. When a stock's price is low compared to its profits, buying back shares is like investing in a super efficient internal project that pays off handsomely, directly boosting earnings per share.
And a share repurchase is most effective when the stock's price is low relative to earnings.
Exactly. The low price to earnings, or PE multiple at which AutoNation's stock often trades, implies a high earnings yield. That's just the inverse of the PE ratio. For instance, a PE of 10x implies an earnings yield of 10%. So, by deploying hundreds of millions of dollars of free cash flow annually to repurchase shares, management is effectively investing at this attractive high earnings yield. This strategy creates a powerful compounding effect on EPS growth by systematically reducing the number of shares outstanding. That's a key factor that contributed to that 37% growth in adjusted EPS in Q2 2025 we saw.
So for investors, this aggressive and consistent buyback policy,
it demonstrates a strong alignment of interests with management, and it can be interpreted as a bullish internal signal regarding the company's long-term prospects and valuation. Management is voting with the company's cash.
Makes sense. Now, in line with this focus on repurchases, AutoNation currently does not pay a cash dividend to common shareholders.
Correct. They prefer to reinvest capital into the business and execute share buybacks.
Although they used to, historically.
Yeah, way back. Historical records indicate they paid dividends in the late 1990s, but that practice was discontinued. Focus shifted to buybacks.
In terms of capital expenditures, the company continues to invest in its physical and digital infrastructure to support long-term growth.
Mm-hmm. About $154 million in the first half of 2025.
And these investments are typically directed toward?
Dealership maintenance and modernization, technology platform enhancements, and the expansion of service capacity, keeping the stores fresh and efficient.
Finally, let's touch on debt management.
Right. AutoNation operates with a significant amount of debt on its balance sheet, which is common, really, in the capital-intensive auto retail industry. You need debt to finance inventory in stores.
And how are they managing it?
As of June 30th, 2025, the company's covenant leverage ratio stood at a manageable 2.33x.
Meaning their debt was just over twice their earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization.
Exactly. That's generally considered a healthy figure in this capital-intensive industry.
And total debt?
Around $9.03 billion. The disciplined management of this leverage, particularly in a fluctuating interest rate environment, is a critical aspect of the company's financial strategy. They have to watch it closely. Eighth, guiding the ship, management and governance.
Okay, who is guiding this massive ship? Let's talk about the leadership team.
It's composed of seasoned executives with deep experience in the automotive retail industry, complemented by leaders recruited from other sectors to bring new skills and perspectives.
And the CEO?
The current chief executive officer is Mike Manley, appointed in November 2021. He brought extensive global automotive experience to the role. He previously served as CEO of Fiat Chrysler Automobiles and head of Americas for Stellantis. So, deep auto background.
And board of directors.
Consists of 9 nominees for 2025, the majority of whom are classified as independent, which is good governance practice.
And the chair is independent.
Yes. In a strong sign of good governance, the role of chairman of the board is held by an independent director, Rick L. Burdick. Separating this function from the CEO role provides independent oversight. The board is characterized by a diversity of professional backgrounds, too. Directors with extensive experience in corporate finance, international law, real estate development, consumer services, a broad range of expertise to guide company strategy.
What about executive compensation? How are they incentivized?
The framework is explicitly designed to align the interests of management with those of shareholders, linking a significant portion of pay to performance.
How does it break down?
Well, there's base salary, of course, an annual cash incentive tied to achieving a preset target for adjusted operating income per share, and long-term incentives granted in the form of restricted stock units, or RSUs.
Are those tied to performance?
Yes. A significant portion of these RSUs are performance-based, vesting only if the company achieves specific targets for relative total shareholder return, how their stock does versus peers, and return on invested capital, or ROIC, over a 3-year period.
So this structure clearly incentivizes management to focus on both stock price appreciation relative to peers and the efficient use of capital.
That's the intent, align interests with shareholders.
And AutoNation has implemented a robust set of corporate governance practices.
Yes, reflecting best practices in the industry. Key features include majority voting for directors in uncontested elections, with a resignation policy if they fail to achieve that standard. Ensures accountability.
Anything else stand out?
The company's bylaws permit eligible long-term shareholders to nominate director candidates for inclusion in the company's official proxy materials. That's known as proxy access, promoting shareholder voice. Directors and employees are strictly prohibited from engaging in hedging transactions or short sales of company stock. Ensures their economic interests remain aligned with other shareholders.
And clawbacks.
Yes, the company has adopted a formal clawback policy. It mandates the recoupment of erroneously awarded incentive compensation in the event of a financial restatement due to misconduct, further ensuring management accountability. Pretty standard stuff for large public companies nowadays, but good to see. On X, the road ahead, risk factors to watch.
Okay, as with any investment, there are risks to watch closely. AutoNation's business is highly cyclical, we've established that.
Very sensitive to the macro environment.
Factors such as consumer confidence, unemployment levels, disposable income, prevailing interest rates, they have a direct and significant impact on consumer demand.
An economic downturn would almost certainly lead to a decline in sales volumes and profitability across their segments. That's the biggest risk, probably.
There's also significant manufacturer and inventory risk.
Mm-hmm. Dependency on the OEMs.
The company's operations are fundamentally dependent on its relationships with automotive manufacturers. Any significant operational disruption, financial distress, or even bankruptcy of a key OEM partner could severely impact AutoNation's ability to source inventory.
Right. If Ford or Toyota stumbles, AutoNation feels it.
Additionally, as inventory levels across the industry continue to normalize, there is a risk that the company may be unable to sell its vehicles at sufficiently profitable margins. That pricing pressure we talked about.
Exactly. Margin risk is real as things normalize.
Competitive and disruption risks are also persistent.
Always there. The industry is characterized by intense competition from other large public dealership groups, thousands of private dealers, and those disruptive online platforms. This competitive pressure could lead to an erosion of market share and margins over time.
And while currently mitigated by state franchise laws, the long-term structural threat of OEMs adopting a direct-to-consumer sales model remains a significant risk to the entire franchise dealer system.
It's the existential threat always lurking, a battle that's always simmering beneath the surface.
AutoNation is also exposed to interest rate and credit risk.
Yep, comes with the territory. Primarily through its vehicle floor plan payables, that inventory financing and other forms of variable rate debt used to finance its operations. A sustained period of high interest rates would increase its borrowing costs and negatively impact profitability. Simple math.
Furthermore, the strategic extension of the AutoNation Finance segment introduces direct consumer credit risk to the company's balance sheet.
Right. If they make bad loans, they eat the losses. Higher than expected loan defaults would result in increased credit losses. That's a key metric to monitor for that division.
In terms of the broader environment, regulatory and geopolitical minefields are a concern.
Always something to watch. New and more stringent environmental regulations could accelerate the costly transition to EVs, requiring significant capital outlays. Any changes to the state franchise laws that currently protect dealers could fundamentally alter the industry's structure and profitability, potentially opening the door for direct sales. That would be a seismic shift.
And geopolitically, tariffs.
The imposition of tariffs on imported vehicles or parts represents a significant and immediate threat. It would likely lead to higher vehicle prices and could significantly dampen consumer demand. It's a constant worry for globally sourced industries like auto.
And finally, like any modern business, there's cybersecurity risk.
Increasingly important. As a modern retailer, AutoNation relies heavily on its information technology systems and those of third-party providers for all aspects of its operations. Sales, service, finance, everything.
Which makes them vulnerable.
Makes the company vulnerable to cyber threats. A significant data breach or system outage could lead to operational disruptions, financial losses, and significant reputational damage.
And we saw an example of this recently in the industry, didn't we?
We did. Mm. The industry-wide disruption caused by the CDK systems outage, which was noted as having a financial impact in AutoNation's own Q2 2025 earnings call, serves as a recent and tangible example of this very real and evolving risk. It showed how dependent dealers are on these systems. X, the price tag. Valuation and what the market sees.
All right, let's talk about the price tag. The valuation of AutoNation. It has to be considered in the context of its publicly traded peers and its own historical trading ranges.
Context is key for valuation.
The company's valuation multiples suggest a mature cyclical business, with the market assigning a notable discount compared to the broader equity market. For someone trying to find value, it's always fascinating to see how the market prices these companies. AutoNation looks like a bit of a bargain compared to some, especially if you consider its diversified business model, maybe.
Well, when compared to its direct peers in the franchised auto dealership space, AutoNation's valuation appears to be broadly in line, actually. It trades at a trailing price-to-earnings, or PE, ratio of approximately 9.8x to 12.0x recently. And an enterprise value to EBITDA, or EBIPA, multiple of roughly 9.6x to 10.9x.
How does that compare to others, like Lithia or Penske?
Lithia Motors trades at a slightly lower PE multiple, but a higher EV/EBITDA multiple, which likely reflects its higher degree of financial leverage. More debt inflates EV/EBITDA. Penske Automotive Group often commands a slight valuation premium, potentially due to the market's appreciation for its international diversification and its stable commercial truck leasing business. A bit more diversification perceived there.
The most significant valuation discrepancy, though, is with CarMax, right? The used car specialist.
Huge difference there. CarMax consistently trades at a substantial premium to the franchise dealers. Its PE ratio is often in the mid-teens, and its EV/EBITDA multiple well above 20x.
Why is such a big premium?
It reflects its different business model. Purely used cars, no OEM relationships to manage, also strong national brand recognition in the used car space, and historically a higher growth profile. The market tends to reward that pure play higher growth story.
So where does AutoNation stand historically?
AutoNation currently appears to be trading within its typical historical valuation bands. Nothing way out of line compared to its own past. The central question for investors, really, is the sustainability of its current earnings base.
Meaning?
Meaning, if the record profitability of the post-pandemic era continues to normalize downwards toward pre-pandemic levels, the current valuation multiples may prove to be less attractive than they appear at first glance. You might be paying a fair price for earnings that are about to shrink.
However, there's another way to look at it. Sum of the parts.
Exactly. A sum of the parts, or SOTP, valuation framework could suggest that AutoNation's consolidated valuation is actually understated.
How does that work?
This analytical approach assigns separate, arguably more appropriate, multiples to each of its distinct business lines. The highly stable and profitable after-sales segment, for example, it could arguably be valued at a multiple similar to that of an auto parts retailer like AutoZone or O'Reilly, which is significantly higher than AutoNation's current consolidated multiple.
And AutoNation Finance.
Similarly, the growing AutoNation Finance arm could be valued as a specialty finance company, again, potentially at a higher multiple. This analytical framework suggests that the market may not be fully appreciating the true value of the individual components within AutoNation's diversified business model. The whole might be worth less than the sum of its parts, valuation-wise.
Interesting. And what truly makes this company's valuation discussion compelling is the power of EPS accretion through those buybacks we keep mentioning.
It's a huge factor here. Its modest valuation, when viewed in conjunction with its aggressive share repurchase program, creates a particularly powerful mechanism for boosting earnings per share for investors.
AutoNation's P.E. ratio in the high single digits to low double digits.
Yeah.
That represents a significant discount to the broader S&P 500 average, right?
Big discount. And as we discussed, a low P.E. ratio corresponds to a high earnings yield. Let's say 10x P/E equals a 10% earnings yield. So when AutoNation repurchases its own stock, it is effectively making an investment that generates a return equal to this high earnings yield. Given that the company is deploying hundreds of millions of dollars annually into these highly accretive buybacks, it is creating a compounding effect on EPS growth that is largely independent of its underlying operational growth.
So even if the business itself isn't growing much, EPS can still grow because the share count shrinks.
Precisely. As long as the company continues to generate strong free cash flow and the market continues to assign a low multiple to its stock, this financial engineering will remain a significant and reliable driver of shareholder value. It's a key part of the bull case. Synthesis and the road ahead for you.
Okay, let's try to synthesize everything we've discussed. Recap AutoNation's core strengths and weaknesses.
A good idea. Pull it all together.
On the strength side, undeniable market leadership and scale. Provides significant advantages in purchasing, marketing, technology. Check.
Check. Highly diversified and resilient business model, particularly with that profitable and countercyclical after-sales segment, the shock absorber.
Check. Proven track record of strong free cash flow generation. Fuels their shareholder-friendly capital allocation, especially those aggressive buybacks.
Check. And the OEM franchise system creates high barriers to entry, protects them from new competition and new vehicle sales.
Okay, those are the big strengths. What about the weaknesses?
High cyclical exposure. Financial performance is intrinsically linked to the health of the broader economy. Can't escape that entirely.
Right. Significant debt load on the balance sheet. Could become a notable risk in a prolonged period of weak demand or high interest rates.
Mm-hmm. Leverage cuts both ways. And while improving, maybe publicly available data on customer satisfaction indicates they sometimes lag some key competitors. Could pose a long-term risk to brand loyalty if not addressed.
Interesting. And finally,
their geographic concentration in the Sunbelt states exposes them to regional economic risks, that concentration we talked about.
Okay. Strengths and weaknesses laid out. This brings us to the core bull thesis, why the optimists see value here.
Right. The argument is that AutoNation is a best-in-class operator, poised to leverage its scale and data advantages to continue consolidating the fragmented U.S. dealership market, keep rolling up smaller players.
And that stable, high-margin cash flow from its defensive after-sales business
provides a reliable funding source for an aggressive and value-accretive share repurchase program, which can drive significant earnings per share growth even in a flat market. That financial engineering aspect.
Plus, strategic initiatives in digital retail, like AutoNation Express and in-house financing through AutoNation Finance.
Offer additional durable levers for long-term growth beyond just selling and servicing cars the old way.
And the punchline for the bulls.
The current valuation appears to not fully reflect the quality, resilience, and shareholder return potential of this diversified business model. It looks cheap relative to its parts and cash flow generation, perhaps.
Okay. Conversely, the core bear thesis.
Yeah.
The cautious view.
The bears argue that the automotive retail industry is in the midst of a challenging peak-to-trough margin normalization cycle. As those unprecedented tailwinds of the post-pandemic era fade, margins are heading down.
And persistently high interest rates and the potential for a broader economic downturn will continue to pressure vehicle affordability and sales volumes.
Correct. At the same time, intensifying competition and the capital-intensive multi-year transition to electric vehicles will likely compress long-term returns on invested capital for the entire industry. It's getting harder and more expensive to operate.
And in such a scenario,
the company's high financial leverage could become a significant risk factor, amplifying any downturn. Debt becomes an anchor in bad times.
Okay, bull versus bear. So for your dashboard, the listener trying to track this, what are the critical factors to monitor going forward?
Good question. I'd narrow it down to five key things. First, gross profit per unit, GPU, especially the trend in new and used vehicle GPUs. This will be the most important near-term indicator of margin pressure. Are they holding up or falling fast?
Got it. Number two.
After sales, same-store growth. The continued resilience and growth of this high-margin segment are critical to the investment thesis. Any significant slowdown here would be a major concern for AutoNation. Watch that shock absorber.
Third.
Monitor the share repurchase pace. The level of buyback activity serves as a key indicator of management's confidence in the company's valuation and its commitment to the stated capital allocation strategy. Are they still buying aggressively?
Makes sense.
Fourth, keep a close eye on AutoNation Finance performance, specifically loan origination growth, net interest margin, and, most importantly, credit loss provisions and delinquency rates. Are the loans they're making good quality?
Crucial for that growing segment. And finally, number five.
Watch the overall industry SAR, the seasonally adjusted annual rate of U.S. vehicle sales. This remains a crucial barometer for the overall health of the industry and a key driver of AutoNation's top-line performance. Is the whole market growing or shrinking?
Okay, GPU, after-sales growth, buyback pace, finance arm health, and industry SAR.
Yep. Those five metrics are your key dashboard. They're the signals that will tell you if the underlying investment thesis is holding true or if maybe a course correction might be needed in your thinking. Outro.
So as you think about the future of the automotive industry, you know, beyond just the shiny new models, consider this. In a world increasingly moving towards electric, connected, and potentially even direct-to-consumer vehicles, how much will the traditional physical dealership really matter in the long run? And will AutoNation's innovative clicks and bricks strategy truly be the durable bridge to that future? Or is it just a sophisticated way to manage a changing tide in an industry still grappling with massive transformation?
It's a fascinating question. It really gets to the heart of the long-term viability of the model.
It is, and it's one that the ongoing consolidation and the evolving relationship between car manufacturers, dealers, and ultimately you, the end consumer, will eventually answer. Lots to watch here.